Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Greg Bresnitz.
And I'm Darren Bresnitz. We're the host of Snacky Tunes.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Heritage Radio Network's Cutting the Curd. Today I'm thrilled to have in studio two Brooklyn cheesemonger store owners, one very, very new, Erin Foster, and one just celebrated her store's fifth anniversary, Beth Lewin. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Diane.
It's so great to see you both here. I love it. I love it. Anyway, let me tell the listeners a little bit about your stores. The new place, Erin's new place, is called Foster Sundry. It opened in December, and it's on Knickerbocker Avenue near Troutman in Bushwick. And the now old place is Eastern District on Manhattan Avenue near Freeman, a couple blocks from the water in Greenpoint. So, you guys, one of you is starting the dream, and one of you is living the dream.
I guess so, but Foster's also sort of been around since when I started living the dream, so he's not exactly a newbie either.
Yeah, and living the dream, it'll be a dream one day. Right now, it's quite fatiguing.
Well, that's because you're in the starting the dream.
That's
part.
True. It's the pre-dream.
Well, you're right, Beth. You kind of jumped in with less obvious cheese experience than Erin had?
Yeah, I had really only spent about 6 months in the business. I'd spent a lot of time thinking about it and mm-hmm. taking classes and mm-hmm. really immersing myself in it, but only professionally for about 6 months before we opened mm-hmm. the store.
Mm-hmm. So what made you think of opening a cheese store?
It was something that was very personal to me. I was in I'd lived in Greenpoint since 97, and it was something that I really knew that I would love to have in the neighborhood, and I figured a few of my neighbors would too. So that really was something that I was thinking about for a while as just kind of not seriously, and then eventually it became more and more serious.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now, Erin, when did this fantasy start in your brain? From the start of cheese or midway through cheese? Or
it probably started when I figured out that cheese could be a real career.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think that's something that we all struggle with, is trying to make this thing that we're passionate about, or we might even pick up shifts and work at a random shop. But the idea that you can actually make a living at cheese is a strange one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
When you tell people, you know, your in-laws don't necessarily want to hear that, you know, their daughter or son is marrying a cheesemonger.
Right. Doesn't sound that impressive.
No, it doesn't. Not on the face of it. But I would say it probably started back in the early 2000s. I've been doing cheese since 2002, started uh-huh. Whole Foods and mm-hmm. then artisanal and then Whole Foods again and mm-hmm. Murray's and mm-hmm. All sorts of different places. I've been around the block. But I really caught the bug pretty early on, mm-hmm. And it's only been sort of a confluence of factors in the last year or two that have made it even a remote possibility.
Mm-hmm. So you knew you wanted to do cheese forever, but you didn't know if you were going to try to open your own store.
Yeah, I think that, well, I knew I wanted to work in food, and cheese is definitely the area where I have the most experience and, mm-hmm. and that I'm, I think, most passionate about. You know, I've been following the careers of some of America's artisan cheesemakers since their beginning. I remember mm-hmm. meeting Mateo, bringing his first Mateo from Jasper Hill, mm-hmm. Bringing his first cheeses down, you know, from his first experimental Constant Bliss down from Vermont yeah. To New York. And mm-hmm. I remember being really excited about that. And,
right.
And now seeing where the industry is 10, 12 years later, it's quite an honor to be a part of it. In the way that we are now.
Mm-hmm. Now, Beth, did you want to be a business owner before you wanted to be a cheese shop, or how did your thinking go?
Yeah, I guess I did sort of casually cycle through various ideas for myself of being a business owner, and I thought of different concepts that never really quite stuck with me. And then somewhere along the line, the cheese thing, it dawned on me, I guess, you know, eventually it does dawn on you, this could be a real thing. And especially since my husband and partner was also interested in craft beer, these two interests that seemed like sort of unrealistic in maybe
separate.
Exactly. By the time of about, you know, 8 years ago, people started to really recognize that that was a good partnership, and both of those things really started taking off in New York City
mm-hmm.
In a way that beer especially really hadn't yet.
Right.
Cheese had always, of course, been
percolating
around. It was, I think what we do have in common is a lot of time thinking about it and then suddenly finding an opportune time to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What percentage of cheesemongers do you think have the fantasy of starting their own shop?
95.
I think it's
I think
too.
You can say that about employees in almost any business where I think you always think you can do it better than the boss man can.
Well, but also I guess anyone in cheese
sure.
wants their own little
store. Well, I think
store.
there's setting up your own counter, determining your own mix,
right.
highlighting specific products, being able to talk and serve in a way and serve a community in the way that you want to. I think that's a very tempting. It's
mm-hmm.
very tempting. Being a cheesemonger is very much about hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you're working in hospitality and you're selling this product that is difficult and expensive and
mm-hmm.
Requires, or at least there's a lot of esoteric knowledge that surrounds it, you have a responsibility and a style that develops to sort of sell cheese in a way that's really good for the customer. And I think everyone mm-hmm. develops their own style and thinks, well, maybe I can do
my
this.
Style is
yeah,
the best.
My style works.
I'm going to
yeah.
do a good job doing this. Well, also it's being with something you love.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know how many shopkeepers are surrounded by something they love.
Yeah, I think we're very lucky.
you know, do cell phone people love cell phones? Maybe they do.
You'll have to have the cell phone show.
I'm gonna check the guys at my cell phone store
yeah.
to see if they really love their cell phones. They might. But I don't know if that's why they work there.
I mean, it's nice to have a crack at something on your own.
Yeah. Now, both of you have fairly unique names, neither of them with cheese in it. Beth's store is called Eastern District. 5 years in, do you regret the name? Do you wish you'd put cheese in the name? Is it confusing to customers?
Yeah, we get a lot of phone calls from people looking for the Eastern District Courthouse, so oftentimes I do wish we had cheese in our name. Looking back, I probably would have done that a little differently.
Uh-huh. And you named it after your neighborhood.
That's right. We wanted to have a local reference to our region of Brooklyn, and we didn't want to be too obvious by having Brooklyn in the name,
right.
but I think having beer and or cheese in the name definitely wouldn't have hurt.
Okay, and now Foster, how did you come up with your name?
I didn't.
Okay.
Someone else did.
It was forced upon you?
It was suggested, and it made sense. Coming up with a name was absolutely one of the hardest parts of opening a business.
Yeah.
It's extraordinarily difficult because you come up with all these names, you've had a couple of beers, and you're like, this is a great name.
And the next day.
And the next day, you're like, that was a terrible name. we came up with some real just stinkers.
Any you remember?
I think Clever Mess was one.
Oh,
it's bad, right?
Clever Mess.
Yeah.
That's like Hot Mess.
Yeah, which is, I think, ultimately why, a good reason why we didn't go with it.
I think one of our best worst names was Wedge World.
Oh, I like that. Wedge World.
Looking back,
maybe you can get a wedgie. You can go get a wedgie at Wedge World.
You know, we really wanted to call the shop Superette for a long time.
Is that because there was a sign on it saying that?
No, I really liked the idea of a Superette. I thought it was, I mean, our shop is sort of like a French style épicerie. We've got a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
We have fresh meat. We're going to have beer. We have all sorts of grocery items and produce in addition to cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that Superette conveyed that. But then around the same time, well, my wife, who's an attorney, advised me against doing that because there were enough other people using Superette that we could have had issues. And also there were a number of businesses
and conflicts, maybe. You know, people would be looking for the wrong
Superette. Looking for the wrong Superette,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really hard. I don't know if our name, I mean, I'm sure, I suspect I'll feel a lot like Beth 5 years down the road. We get a lot of Foster Sunday, people call it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are they looking for ice cream?
I don't really know. I think they're like, why did you name it Foster Sunday? And I didn't. I didn't name it that. It's an R.
You know, you're supposed to be nice to your customers.
I'm very, very nice about letting them know that it's not what the store's called.
Okay. Now, what do you think? I'm wondering about what differences with 5 years apart from your opening your stores are in either cheese world, food world, or the economy, or probably social networking. You probably had a lot more people watching you on social networking, do you think?
You're pointing at me.
Yeah, I'm pointing at Aaron.
Yes.
Are you saying I'm being rude?
No, I'm it's Foster Sundry.
But no, your name is Aaron.
I would say my name is Aaron. People call me equal parts Foster.
People
and Aaron.
Call him Foster. Yes. I call you Aaron.
You can call me Aaron or Foster. I have no preference whatsoever.
But Foster is your last name.
Foster is my last name.
Okay.
I would say Instagram has been huge. And it feels silly, like, as someone in their mid-30s to be like, Instagram's really amazing for us. but it is. And I would also say that on the sourcing trip that we took this spring and summer, Instagram is really huge for cheesemakers as well.
Mm-hmm.
The way that small cheesemakers, I'm thinking of Sugar House Creamery, for example, but there are many others, the way that their information about their cheeses will get out and get around via social networking, particularly Instagram, it's pivotal to their business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been pivotal to ours. Like, when we post something online, people come in and ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like within minutes or hours.
Mm-hmm. Is Facebook still active or is it over?
No, people follow that as well.
Okay.
Our neighborhood, and I'd be interested to hear Beth's take on this, but our neighborhood is very diverse and we have a lot of people of different ages coming in shopping.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Facebook appeals to some and Instagram to others. We're not on, we might be on Snapchat. I actually don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how that works.
Mm-hmm. Beth, what do you think about social networking? Have you felt you have to hurry up and get more involved?
Yeah, we had Facebook and Twitter accounts and we're using those from the beginning, but I was a little bit delayed in getting going with Instagram and I regret that because I just should have jumped on it immediately. So that would be my advice to anyone is as new forms of communication are coming out to always, always take advantage of them. So we are on Instagram now and it's great, but I feel like might be a little behind there. But the one thing online that has the most immediate effect for us is our email lists.
Oh, still?
Those are still, you know, although that's supposedly passé, those are our most committed customers and fans. And those are the people who are most likely to come in the next day and say, I want that, that you mentioned in your email yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's because 5 years ago when you opened, email was much more current. You know, you probably got everybody's address and started your list right away.
That might be part of it, but I also think that a lot of times on sort of things like Instagram, people are a lot of the people that follow you are more sort of casual. They might just want to look at pretty pictures. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they sign up for your email, they definitely want to, they've said, I want to hear specifically from you. That it mm-hmm. sort of takes an extra step. So they're like a little bit more qualified as a target.
Or dedicated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that said, I think it's totally necessary to do it all. Mm-hmm.
Do you have an email list yet?
We have. We've sent one email. It's something that we, that I want to be careful with.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because it's invasive.
Oh, okay.
Or it can mm-hmm. be invasive if it's mm-hmm. done wrongly.
Okay.
And I'm
been targeted by evasive emails?
No, I think that I'm just very aware of that, mm-hmm. and okay. I want to make sure that we do right by our customers. And, mm-hmm. But it's, I mean, I'm sure I'm sort of saving. I also am wary until our shop is really fully up and running and everything is sort of, when we have our grand opening.
There'll be a party.
We'll certainly have a party. We'll have several, I hope.
Oh, good.
I'd be interested in hearing Beth's take on this, but as we sort of meet our new customers for the first time, mm-hmm. I'm very aware of the kind of face that we're putting forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make sure that when we say something as loud as via email, you should come in and visit us, that we're ready to handle that mm-hmm. and that we're ready to greet those customers and serve them in the best way that we can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, another area that I wanted to talk about is your neighborhoods. They're pretty different, and they're both pretty quirky, I'd say. Both in the process of gentrifying. Maybe yours, Beth's, is ahead on Manhattan Avenue than yours is.
We don't like to use the G word.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's a bad word.
It's a fraught word.
Okay, politically?
I just think that it means different people, different things to different people. To some people, it's a negative, and other people, it's a positive. And
okay.
I think it doesn't really do anything to illuminate how our business affects the neighborhood. I don't think it serves it's not really very useful in the conversation.
Okay. Well,
you understand that. Yeah. It really carries heavy different kinds of meanings for different people, but we're definitely, like many neighborhoods in New York, we're going through a lot of changes around us. And in Greenpoint, it's been a neighborhood, since I've lived there, people said, oh, it's changing so much. And in the last year and a half is when I feel like it's been really dramatically changing, where there are tons of buildings being taken down and large buildings being built in their place. And
more are coming.
Yeah. Huge buildings are coming. And it's got all kinds of implications for our business. There are definitely a lot of our loyal, committed customers have been priced out of the neighborhood. It's sort of a small, isolated neighborhood. So there really isn't a whole lot of real estate available.
Right. Eastern District is on kind of the sleepy end of Manhattan Avenue.
We're on a little peninsula, really.
It's not sleepy anymore, though. As a neighbor of Beth,
Oh, right, you live there.
Yes,
right,
I live in Greenpoint and commute to Bushwick.
So now we have construction sounds going on all the time, and construction debris blowing down the street.
Oh dear.
So it's a lot of times people said, oh, you're in such the right place, you're ahead of the curve, but it's kind of a tumultuous time.
Yeah, and I hate when people say you're ahead of the curve, it doesn't get at the whole story. Neighborhoods don't work like that in New York. They change so quickly and uh-huh. in ways that you don't expect.
Right. Yeah, that's a major oversimplification.
Okay. How did you pick your corner?
I looked for an area. I was trying to be as scientific as possible about it. Mm-hmm. I looked at different neighborhoods that were served by cheese or meat shops in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and I kind of looked... I kind of plotted them on a map and then looked at their radiuses and...
You seem to be a little bit out of the mainstream.
Yeah.
Cheese store-wise.
Only insofar as there's no cheese store there yet.
yeah, that's what I mean.
But why open a shop where there's a cheese store already there?
No, I agree. I think that's good because you will have your... certain customers who are delighted, like, here's a neighborhood cheese store.
Well, I would say anecdotally, there are people that I spoke to when I was at the Brooklyn Kitchen that would sort of complain that they had to come all the way to Bedford Avenue or sometimes into Manhattan to mm-hmm. get products that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been visiting Bushwick, and it's a really exciting sort of restaurant and bar scene right now. And there's a lot happening there with Ichiran Ramen coming, and mm-hmm. I know Tartine Blue Bottle were thinking about expanding in that area. They've now separated, but they still have a lease on a space, so mm-hmm. at least as far as I know. So there was a lot of interesting things happening, mm-hmm. but it was a neighborhood that seemed vibrant and dynamic, and more people, more friends of mine moving to Bushwick and Ridgewood
mm-hmm.
As they get priced out of places like Williamsburg and Greenpoint.
Right.
But either underserved or unserved on the retail food side.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody who likes to buy things and cook had any options.
Right. There. How big an area do you feel in New York? Is it miles? Is it blocks? Where do they say you get your clients from, your customers from?
It really depends. Some people, we were chatting about this earlier, Beth mm-hmm. and I. Mm-hmm. What would you say, Beth?
It would be hard for me to say a number of blocks, and I'm sure it depends on the concentration of the population also.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say at this point, 80% of our customers are regulars.
Mm-hmm.
So they live somewhere within the neighborhood, and they're mm-hmm. coming in twice a week to once a month. And that is definitely the majority of our customers.
Okay.
And I would say 1 out of 3 of our customers so far are repeat customers.
Mm-hmm. Already in a month.
Mm-hmm. One out of 3,
yeah.
1 out of 4.
Mm-hmm.
But people, which means that 2 out of 3 are coming in for the first time and discovering us. And we had a very generous piece posted in Bushwick Daily that I think has helped people.
Mm-hmm.
Our storefront itself is fairly, sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
It's very bright, and mm-hmm. it's on a corner that was just that in the bodega that was there before we set up was just kind of shut down and mm-hmm. looking pretty beat up. So
when I had seen the old picture versus the real store, it was quite a big difference.
Yeah, I could say what the graffiti said on the front, but I don't think I can swear on here.
Oh, you can.
What's a poop dick?
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's great because you know whatever you're going to put there is going to be nicer than
right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, it's time for us to take a break. We'll have an advertisement and we'll be back soon.
Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hello, it's Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd. Whoops, I almost missed my break. There are two major differences in these stores that I'm thinking. Beth's store has lots of beer, and Aaron, you have a whole butcher department.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you decide to add those major things? I guess, Beth, you first. And what percent of work is it to add something?
So for us, it was because I was in partnership with my husband, Chris, that those were where our main interests lied in artisanal cheese and craft beer. And they also are two great tastes that taste great together. So we really originally, that was the
from
kernel
the start.
Of the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, those two categories are still our biggest categories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, between, you know, probably 20-30% of our sales each month is in each of those categories. Sandwiches and prepared foods come after that. Mm-hmm. Charcuterie comes in after that. And then everything else is, mm-hmm. is just kind of like the icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm. And has the beer expanded, or has it gotten more expensive, or has the neighborhood wanted more interesting beers?
Yeah, there has definitely been a big trend towards people becoming more adventurous in their beer tastes than mm-hmm. there were when we first opened. We had a lot more very sort of, you know, familiar looking six packs, and then as the years have gone by, people started coming in and saying, tell me about these sour beers I've been reading about. What should mm-hmm. I taste? And tell me about a Gosa. And tell me, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's definitely our cheeses and our beers, I think, both our selections have become more sophisticated as mm-hmm. our customers have also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now adding the butcher, was that your idea from the start, Aaron?
No, I think I just tried to make things as difficult as possible.
For yourself.
And expensive. I mean, what we've basically gone and done is opened four shops in one. We opened a grocery store, a cheese shop, a butcher shop, and a coffee shop. We have very sophisticated.
Oh, that was smart thinking.
Well, at the same time, you've got all the equipment and all the labor, and each of those departments is very skilled. So it's
I would think particularly butcher. I mean, that's...
Well, they all require...
Other people don't know how to do that.
The butchers couldn't really jump in onto the cheese counter either, so mm-hmm. it's or the cheesemongers jump onto the
coffee
bar.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that you know, I learned a lot working, I think, most recently at the Brooklyn Kitchen. Mm-hmm. I have a ton of respect and admiration for Harry and Taylor over there. Mm-hmm. They've done amazing work, along with Brent at the Meat Hook as well, Brent and Ben.
Mm-hmm.
What's really remarkable about their shop is you can go in and it's a sort of full service shop. You can go in and get a protein from the meat counter. You can get some groceries and vegetables to cook it with. You can get a pan in which to cook it, and you can take a class on how to cook it in that pan, which
That's
I think is really
true.
And the sort of synergy is a dumb word. I've been calling it secret sauce, but that sort of secret sauce of how all that hangs together was really compelling and really interesting, and I wanted to do something where I could try and replicate that
mm-hmm.
Secret sauce. So I really wanted I really wanted someone to be able to come in and get cheese and meat cheese and charcuterie, just to have a little cheese plate and hang out and mm-hmm. get things that are prepared, or to be able to come in and we could help them, because we're all very passionate cooks,
mm-hmm.
get a protein, get some groceries, get some mm-hmm. vegetables, and be able to cook a whole meal. And then ultimately, once we get our license, get a nice bottle of beer or cider to go with it.
Oh, you will branch into beer too?
Yeah, we're waiting on our license.
Okay, how long does that take? A really long time?
It seems interminable. There's no way to know.
Did the Superette have one?
I think it did, but it's
that
not relevant
doesn't help.
To us.
That
yeah.
doesn't help. I thought
no.
it in something
some states,
to do with distance.
In some states, that's well, since they're not in existence anymore, mm-hmm. It shouldn't be a big issue. We're far enough from a school and a church.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter. It's a waiting game.
Mm-hmm. So would you? Yeah, Beth?
I just want to follow up that I think the two main things that people ask for us to have in our store that we don't have are fresh meat and coffee. So
that's nice to hear.
I haven't mentioned that, but I think you might be onto something.
That's delightful.
Now, how many butchers do you have to employ?
Well, right now we have roughly 15 shifts a week to fill in every department.
Wow.
So, I mean, if we're 8 to 8, so that's an open and a close, and that's if there's there's effectively no redundancy.
Right.
So, that's three people.
So you have started at a busier level.
Or
more employees.
Yes. Well, I mean, we started, we have 9 full-time employees.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We started with 2.
Yeah. You and Chris.
And we also opened significantly late, so we ended up, we put together an amazing crack team. My team is unbelievable. They're uh-huh. fantastic. And we paid to keep them around.
Oh, before you opened because you were
opened,
late.
Which was really, mm-hmm. Is and continues to be difficult financially, but it was absolutely the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you hop behind, can you do all the jobs?
I want to be able to do all the jobs. It's very important to me as a business owner to be able to do all the jobs as well as any of my employees can.
Okay. Can you butcher yet?
I can't butcher yet.
But you're interested.
I'm very interested. And as soon as I get another cheesemonger, I'm hoping to spend a little bit more time cross-training.
Okay.
Same goes for coffee.
Okay.
right now, I, you know, I'll work behind the cheese counter my 10 shifts a week, and then where I'm most helpful is you know, I'm scrubbing the floors and toilet and sweeping up.
Oh, at the end of the day.
Well, somebody's got to do it, and everyone else is quite busy, so.
And tired.
And tired. No, this, my...
I would think the butcher thing is a whole hard department to deal with.
Well, we're very fortunate.
It's much more physical than...
It is. We received a very large cow today, and it's grueling work to bring it inside at in 20-degree weather, and each one of those pieces weighs 100 pounds or more, so...
And is your stuff all heritage fancy stuff or normal?
I mean, those are not the words I would choose to use.
You got that fancy meat?
we got them fancy meats.
I'm showing my lack
Our beef is grass-fed, grass-finished.
Understanding.
Our beef is 100% grass-fed, grass-finished, working with amazing farmers that most of whom I've had the opportunity to visit and actually, you know, see their animals and see the farm. Our pork is pastured. Our chickens are a hybrid that are air chilled. And our eggs come from the same producer as our pork. We pay a lot of attention. Our butcher, Matthew Dale, who comes to us from Marlowe and Daughters, is amazing. And we couldn't have opened this place without him.
Mm-hmm.
My sister, who helped us put together the coffee program, was integral. And
great.
Our general manager, Anika, has really carried me.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now, first, a question for you, Aaron. Could you possibly have conceived ahead of time of how exhausting it would be?
No, not at all. I'm so tired.
Right, and there's probably no end in sight, even though it's January.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I was telling Beth my wife is away on business for 3 weeks. So it's just me and the dog. And
oh, is that good?
Well, it's good in that she can't...
complain?
She can't complain about the half-finished wine glasses on my nightstand, because I come home and have a glass of wine or beer and fall asleep immediately. But it's been exhausting, but it's a very gratifying kind of exhausting. It's nice to see Beth not look exhausted.
Yeah,
like the ghost of Christmas future.
Now, totally. I was going to ask you, Beth, has it calmed down? Being a store owner, especially post-holiday, now do you have help?
Yeah. Like I said, it started off with just me and Chris, and now we still only have 2 part-time employees. We're still a small operation, but I only have to be in the store 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And
a piece of cake.
Yeah. No. I do work from home as well.
And you live right around the corner.
So that's the part.
I pop in.
Yeah, so you can come for an emergency or a visit or anything.
Yeah. When the power went out, we had a little electrical problem last weekend, and so I popped in. The first year was definitely so intense and incredibly exhausting, after that things started to flow.
Okay. And your wife is not doing it with you. Has she jumped in?
She's given her advice on design aspects that are really nice, and when she does come in, the first thing she does is pick up a dustpan and broom and cleans up, which I think is the right thing to do.
Okay.
And she's been extraordinarily supportive. When I say there was a confluence of factors that contributed to the ability for us to open the store, she's a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Her support, both in supporting us and also being supportive emotionally and sort of intellectually for me while I put this thing together, has been sort of indescribably amazing.
Mm-hmm. And you're newlyweds.
Relatively speaking, yeah. We got married last May.
All right. You've been married a long time?
We got married a year before we opened the store.
Oh, okay. So it was legal.
Yeah.
So, and how was that? Do you feel like the store was a strain on your marriage at first, or...
Well, the first thing I would say about that is that it's financially very stressful when you're both depending on the same business for your livelihood. And then in terms of the fact that you're spending 24 hours a day together and having your home and your life together as well as your business together, definitely, especially at the beginning, you're it just intensifies everything,
and you're nervous.
Yeah, you're stressed.
It's hard to make the borders between.
You can't come home and complain about your boss because
you don't have one anymore.
Yeah, exactly. but the really awesome thing is working through all that, and it's mm-hmm. probably kind of the same kind of things you need to work through in a marriage eventually, anyway. It's challenging, mm-hmm. but it's also amazing to then see the things that your partner can do that maybe you would never see them do otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Or how you can split up tasks and one be good at one thing and one be good at another.
You learn how to work together better and mm-hmm. better. Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys have at the shop, you have a really nice sort of rapport, and one of you, I think, is more knowledgeable and more deeply passionate about beer, and one of you is more knowledgeable and deeply passionate about cheese, and it's a very complimentary.
Yeah, we're not on each other's turf too much, which mm-hmm. is good.
Mm-hmm. How much help do you have behind the scenes, either store, like business people or internet help or investors, parents? Do you feel like you're on your own, or you've got good support?
I have some good support. I would always welcome more, but yeah, definitely parents cannot be underestimated for their importance of just providing all kinds of support. And I have gotten loans from my parents,
mm-hmm.
And then on the sort of more like business advice side, of course, we have an accountant, a lawyer, a bookkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
I've participated in various sort of entrepreneurial groups where mm-hmm. I have sort of peer groups to talk mm-hmm. about business with, people who are not in the cheese business, but just small business owners of other types. And that's been really helpful too.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Aaron?
I would say the same. Parents and family have been incredibly supportive, both with their time, with their emotional support, and then financial support. Our shop is a combination of investment by family and extended family mm-hmm. and personal investment, and that allows us a certain amount of freedom, but also is quite scary
mm-hmm.
Because I try to avoid mixing business and pleasure in that way, or family and work.
Right.
I think it's good to have boundaries
mm-hmm.
In terms of...
Well, then there might be more pressure on you to succeed.
Well, yeah, I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't open a business to fail, obviously, but it's extraordinarily stressful. There's mm-hmm. there's no sugarcoating that. It's very, very stressful.
Okay.
But I would say, yeah, family's been very supportive. Google is always great.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've got a very good, I can't say enough about my staff. They're amazing. But also, I came into this with a lot of sort of self-taught business side mm-hmm. sort of models and plans, and it'll be interesting. I mean, I'd love to come back and talk to you in a year or so, and, mm-hmm. and we can look and see it.
See what's happened.
What I had planned to do versus what we actually did.
And another thing that I didn't really discover until a couple, maybe a year or two into it, is the amazing cheese community, the mm-hmm. cheese professionals that are out there, the cheesemakers who come down and want you to taste and want your feedback and want to help you grow. In this city, we have a lot of friendly competitors, people that I'm really happy to be working with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I've learned a lot from our competitors and our colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had that in my professional career before.
Yeah, because you came into it sort of from the outside. So you met the cheese community as a cheese store owner, where you've grown, Aaron, you've grown out of the community.
I would say that's true.
Yeah.
And when I, when we first opened, Foster came in and said, "Hey, what's going on here?" And definitely,
and I've been a regular customer for
exactly.
Exciting news: a new cheese store.
Yeah. So I think that is a really great thing about our business mm-hmm. that I had no idea it was going to be that awesome.
Uh-huh. I think a rising tide floats all boats in that respect, and. I'm my one cheesemonger is going on vacation in a couple of weeks, and I am that leaves just me for a very busy weekend.
Uh-huh.
So I just posted on Facebook to see if any other guest mongers from other mm-hmm. shops wanted to come by, and people have been really into that.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky that the cheese industry is is very sort of co-supportive.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great.
Mm-hmm. So what, looking, but you know, you over your new store and you over your older store, what things have still surprised you, either good or bad, like that you just hadn't been expecting, have been either delighted or thoroughly shocked and disappointed to run into?
I have been really surprised how much people are really into charcuterie, which is great. I like it too, but to me,
you guys have a slicer?
Yeah. To me, cheese is endlessly fascinating and delicious, and I could spend all day just tasting different cheeses, and it's really surprising and weird to me when someone's having a party and they come in and they're like, five different kinds of cured pork and one piece of cheese. I think that's so weird.
I've also experienced that. That's quite surprising.
But, you know, different
right.
tastes.
Right, and it's good for your charcuterie department.
That's right.
I would say, to answer your question, probably two things. One is... it's very expensive to open a store.
I think when Diane asked me that question when I was on the show 3 or 4 years ago, that was my answer.
Yeah. Right. The cost.
The amount of unanticipated expenses that you, I feel like I made very careful, like,
plans.
Business models and plans, but even down to, like, unexpected purchases of knives or different supplies that we didn't anticipate or... you know, more waste than we had initially planned. I mean, or electricity is costing different than you planned. There's so many places where you can bleed money out, or where you have to spend more money on something that you didn't anticipate. Like, we're not planning to buy a vacuum sealer, and now we have to buy a vacuum sealer or a dehydrator. Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah.
Repairs.
Repairs, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're only at the very beginning, but already having somebody come in even with new equipment, the amount of refrigeration we have is a lot, and refrigeration is very finicky. I would also say that, like, I've been surprised and delighted by how well and how quickly we've been received so positively by the neighborhood.
Oh, good. Good.
I felt like it was going to be an uphill battle, just because it is. When you open a new business, people are already accustomed to patronizing other businesses, and you have to add value in some way.
You're breaking in.
Yeah. But I think there was a lot of pent-up demand, and people, I mean, we get paid this compliment 10 times a day, and every time I just, like, I tear up. They say, we're so happy you're here.
Oh,
and
great.
It's like, I'm so happy you're here.
It's the feelings mutual.
I may be more happy that you're here than you are that we're here, but it's genuinely one of the nicest compliments we've been paid, and paid repeatedly. And
I think
it means
and
the world.
And it's encouraging. It's very encouraging.
It is. And everyone on staff, like, it's funny when you
they
hear
they like it too.
They love it. And almost everyone has adopted the sort of same response. It's like, well, we're really excited to be here.
Yeah, that's really just the best feeling. And so if you have a favorite store and you haven't told the people who run it that it's your favorite store, do it. It will totally make their day.
Yes, that is.
That's great.
So great.
That's a good piece of advice.
I go home and tell my wife when people say stuff like that. So.
That's funny. Do your workers live close by?
Almost everyone lives in Bushwick or Ridgewood. Mm-hmm. Bushwick, Ridgewood, or Bed-Stuy, except for me.
So that must be nice for them.
I think it's nice for them. I mean, we try to take really good care of them at this stage in the game. We're still having, like, more waste than we would expect. So. Everyone gets to take food home, and it's also really good for training purposes, like for people to understand different cuts of meat, to try different cheeses. Whenever I cut something, a taste of something that's particularly good or interesting for a customer, I usually set some aside for the baristas or someone working the register, or I bring it over by the meat counter. And they do the same when they're developing sausage blends or things like that. But yeah, the staff, I mean, I could just gush all day about my staff.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, our time is up. I want to thank you both, Aaron Foster of Foster Sundry and Beth Lewand of Eastern District, for coming on the show today and talking about opening a cheese store.
Thank you, Diane, and thank you, Heritage Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and congratulations, Beth, again on 5 years. That's crazy.
And I want to thank Liz Smith, our engineer, and I want to thank John Burt for his cheese song that starts the show. And I'll be back next month, probably with a book review. Bye.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org.
You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.